Live to see it, friends, and welcome to the World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. In the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, I am doing great. Got to the end of a very strange week, and we've had a good time with this series of programs, haven't we?
We have. It has been a strange week. It's been, as we noted on Wednesday's show, it's been a strange year. Maybe a record-breaking year for odd things happening. But we're celebrating the strange all this week. We've kind of tied it in, oh so loosely, to the release of the Doctor Strange movie, I guess just borrowing the name Strange more than anything else. But we talked on Monday about the kind of strange nature of the natural universe. We talked Wednesday about how strange the world seems to be, and it was great because it was our post-election show, and we got to talk about the just freak show that was the 2016 presidential election as a great example of strangeness. And now tonight, we're going to wrap up the series by talking about how the future is weirder than you think. And I've set the bar pretty high here, Stephen, because I think I can pull off the future is weirder than you think when I get together with, you know, at a family reunion or, you know, just strike up a conversation with somebody on an airplane or something like that. But for listeners to this show, you know, do we have evidence that the future is weirder than they think? I didn't think about that until I, you know, just now. So tell me, or, you know, do we have enough strange to go around?
I don't know. We're, you know what, though? Let me just throw this one out, just sort of a
go
as a possibility. So, you know, you've heard about the Hyperloop. Elon Musk, it's another idea. It's, you know, from the fertile mind of Elon Musk, you know, when he's not running one of his two or three earth-changing companies, he's writing white papers on how to change transportation with something called the Hyperloop, which is
Just point out, sometimes he's just kind of showing off, right? I mean, it's like...
I think so. The man's brilliant, no doubt.
Yeah.
It's always, you know, it's always fun to follow Elon Musk. And what he has proposed with the Hyperloop is, you know, we're talking about a levitating train car, basically, inside a vacuum tube sent at speeds in excess of what would break the sound barrier, but it's not breaking the sound barrier because it's, again, you're in a vacuum. And so you're not making sonic booms and things like that. And so, you know, he's set it up as a possibility for, you know, maybe between cities in California. But you know what? Hey, it looks like it might not happen first in the United States. Read an interesting story. Looks like they announced that Hyperloop One wants to build the futuristic superfast Hyperloop to connect Dubai and Abu Dhabi. And so that you can get between those two cities in 12 minutes on the Hyperloop.
And how far apart are they?
Oh, gosh, I'm sorry, I should have that right in front of me, Phil.
But that's more impressive if they're, you know, 100 miles apart than if they're, you know, 20 miles.
Right.
Apart,
right? We're talking about something that'll travel at 700 miles per hour, and you know, obviously you got to get up to speed, and then you got to slow down too. Let's imagine something.
Well, 600 miles an hour is 10 miles a minute, so 12 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's like 150 miles. You're getting there in 12 minutes. Is that right? I'm not sure if I did that math right.
But I think that's not terrible math. I think that's you're probably in somewhere in the ballpark. Let me do a real, you know, while we continue the show, I'm going to do a little Google search and find out how far they are apart from each other.
Yeah, because that is the key. Well, that is a great That is a great story. At this point, it would almost be strange if something like this did happen in America. It seems like all the cool construction projects and all the big infrastructure things always happen in other countries these days. And the Dubai has been particularly a spot of that kind of stuff happening. You know, tallest building.
92 miles.
92 miles. Okay, so 92 miles in 12 minutes. That's fast. You know, that's
it is.
That's getting somewhere, and that'll be a nice proof of concept for the system when they get it up and running. Because you start applying that same system, and you go, well, let's see, what if something was 900 miles away? Then it would take 2 hours to get there, and that would be booking, right? I mean, that would be hauling some serious butt. You might even go faster. I don't know,
over a further distance, you probably could average higher speeds because, you know, you have less speed up and slow down time, right? More time at top speed. So, I think you'd actually see improvements on the number of miles you travel per minute if you're going further. So, it's still impressive, and I hope that wherever in the world that it's tried, that it's a success, so that, you know, we see it everywhere. That'd be awesome.
I would love to see that implemented here in the U.S. And one day, I think it'll be really cool if we have these connecting continents, right? This mode of transportation could ultimately replace passenger airplanes, right? There might not ever be a need for it to, but it could, and it would be pretty cool if it gave airplanes a run for its money. And this one would almost fit if we were doing the future is cooler than you think, because it's one of those technologies that you can say whatever else you want to. It's kind of like a flying car. It's just cool, right? I don't know how practical it is. I don't know how much we need it. It's not like the self-driving car, which I think is evolving out of, you know, a lot of drivers and almost out of necessity. This one is just, it's so cool that we really have to have it eventually, I think.
I think ultimately it'll prove to be very efficient, Bill. I think it may be it'll be cheaper to move people per mile. This way than any other way, because again, you're moving through a vacuum. You know, it's
there you go. It's pretty expensive to implement, but once you've got it up and running, dirt cheap to run the thing, right?
Right.
In terms of the amount of output of energy that you have to expend in order to get somebody someplace. I like it. I think that's cool. Yeah. And these other kind of broad topics that I had lined up for this show are really kind of in the vein of, they don't seem strange to people who talk about the future. And one of the oddities, I guess, of the future as it closes in on us is how commonplace a lot of these ideas have become. I've been listening to on audiobooks. I've been listening to a book called I think it's called The Economic Singularity. I'll get the title right in the show notes. A British futurist, I can't think of his name, but he's basically talking about the rise of the machines. I mean, he's basically talking about economic rapid radical economic change that's going to be driven by automation. All the stuff that we've talked about a million times. And it's interesting, he quotes Martin Ford, who we've had on the show. He talks to Robin Hanson, who we've had on the show. He talks about Ben Goetzel. I mean, I love listening to something like this because it's like, yep, talk to him. Yep, we know this guy. Yep, we've included that one in our in our thinking. And he talks about how, for example, and I didn't realize this, Martin Ford, not the book The Lights in the Tunnel that he was on our show talking about a while back, but the one that came out after that, that actually got some distinction from The Economist magazine. Right, it's like this crazy way out speculation about the robots taking over and taking all of our jobs is, The Economist looks at it and goes, you know what, that's an important book. We should we should recognize him for his contribution that he's making to the field of economics. And economics, you know, being a field that you typically think of as being, you know, maybe a little on the dry side if you're not doing the Freakonomics style of looking at the world. And yet here they are deeply involved in talking about robots taking over people's jobs. This same kind of thing going on when we talk about self-driving cars. I mean, we've talked about how quickly that went from being something that people imagined to being something that, you know, it is all around us, right? I mean, the beginnings of it have started, and people don't really flinch at the idea anymore, right? It's more like something that car companies are planning to do than it is this odd futuristic scenario, this strange idea that it was even just, I don't know, what, 4 or 5 years ago, it was still pretty out there, wasn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, I still have trouble convincing, like, family members that it's, you know, that we're on the road to that. I mean, and what's remarkable is that, I mean, there are cars now the Tesla, for example, has all of the hardware to be a self-driving car now. That they're putting out now, and they're just perfecting the software. It could be a software patch, in 6 months to a year. That's pretty remarkable, and it's come so far, hasn't it?
It really is quite amazing. And we were talking about on Wednesday's show about how, you know, something as straightforward as everybody tracking the election results, so many of us were sitting, you know, watching the TV, but also looking at this app, I guess it's really the site that the New York Times had put up that was calculating the odds of who was going to win in real time throughout the course of the night as votes were coming in. And that was just this, you know, completely AI-driven site, right? There were no, I'm sure there were some humans writing some of the copy or some of that kind of stuff, but basically you've got an artificial intelligence giving us live content in real time, and we're riveted by it, right? I mean, it's like it was
better and quicker than what we were getting, you know, on the networks, Phil. I mean, if you were watching the New York Times website and following that tracker, you knew early in the evening that it was likely going to be a good night for Trump and a bad night for Hillary Clinton. It gave it away early, and this AI was just looking at, okay, and it was doing things. It was looking at a bigger picture than a human could possibly do. It was saying, okay, I know that this area is urban and therefore will go blue. And so I factor that in, even though I don't have all the votes for that area. And the algorithms, I'm sure, were you know, pages long, you know. But but this thing was operating. I mean, it operated smoothly and gave an intelligent analysis second by second. And of course, you couldn't get that from any human commentator last night. We had to rely on the AI, didn't we?
Well, and in fact, if you want to look at the next closest, you know, the thing you could really compare it to would be like, say, Nate Silver's 538.com site, which I was swapping back and forth between New York Times and that site. Obviously, Nate Silver has a big algorithm or set of algorithms that's crunching his charts, but it's also just a website that a guy is doing, you know, whatever automation tool he's using there, WordPress or whatever it is. There's definitely a much more hands-on guy doing a thing, running a program, putting the output out, than this absolutely seamless experience that you had tracking the New York Times, right? Where it was the taking in the data, figuring out what was going to happen, and publishing the site were all just this seamless experience. And to your point, one that was able to keep well ahead of Nate Silver, who was also ahead of the TV network. So it was like,
right,
kind of it's like you're watching the evolution of this as you go, because in 2012, Nate Silver was all the rage, right? That was like, well, this guy has, you know, got it down, and he's, you know, he's the mastermind of projecting this kind of stuff. But his projections were slow. They were lagging compared to the New York Times. And it had just, I mean, that great graphic of that needle. For those who didn't see it, basically, you know, it's just, you know, the needle in the middle is at zero, and then it points, you know, one way, I guess, to the left for Hillary and to the right for Trump, you know, more likely, less, you know, less likely, more likely, extremely likely, it's going to happen. And you just watch that thing going right, you know, as the chart turns more red throughout the evening. And everything on there was this really compelling, kind of graphic. But, you know, all that.
If you just follow the networks and didn't look at that website, Phil, you can't really tell when they start just throwing states up on the map, you know, what that means regarding the, regarding the outcome of the entire race, can you? I mean, we're dealing with electoral colleges, and, you know, it's always, you know, for example, when both times that Barack Obama was elected, you had conservatives saying, well, you know, the whole country's red and just, you know, you just got a little blue on both sides of the country. What's the deal? How do we elect a? Well, it's population, obviously, and you know, and the Electoral College works that way. You know, this little, like you say, the seamless experience of watching that needle give a percentage likelihood. To me, it was, you know, it was a lot. It was a clarifying experience by comparison to watching them throw, you know, blue and red states up on a map. It just It simplified the analysis, didn't it? To where, you know, I can follow this.
It absolutely did, and I think you know, we could talk about it all night. But the point is, it's just another example of artificial intelligence kind of taking over, right? We see it happening all the time, and we think from watching the Terminator, you know, movies back in the 80s and 90s. That, you know, when the machines take over, it's this big dramatic conflict. And in fact, it's this insidious thing that we welcome at almost every stage, right? Because the machines keep taking better care of us than we're able to take care of ourselves. I mean, strictly speaking, the most manual sense, it's like, you know, why are self-driving cars inevitable? They're inevitable because they're going to do a better job and they're going to kill fewer people, right? There's all these economic efficiencies, but the bottom line is it's going to save a tremendous amount of human life. So that's why we're going to go there. Artificial intelligence is the big driver there, and we'll welcome our robot overlords. When we see something like tracking those election results, nobody is sitting back going, well, wait, isn't this putting regular analysts out of work and making the TV networks look silly? Nobody thinks that. Everybody thinks, hey, this is cool, right? I'm glad I'm getting my information this way, because it's a much better way of getting my information.
What about this, Phil? I mean, what about fleets of robotic tractors producing wheat? I mean, the romantic notion of, Green Acres is the place to be with a guy out on the tractor, you know, that's gone, because now it's a bunch of robots producing, you know, wheat in much larger fields, I'm sure. You know, you got 100,000 acre fields that are covered in wheat being managed by robotic tractors without a human setting foot on them. But you know what? If that feeds the world, you know, and there's less hunger in the world because of it, I suspect we'll go that way, right? So
I think so. We will welcome that with the same kind of sure, let's do it that we do the rest, you know, the rest of these kinds of changes. We see this stuff occurring. It immediately loses its magic. Right. It's, you know, there's the strangeness. It's like you can almost only see if you stop and think about it. The world becomes very strange indeed in a very short period of time, because every, you know, with each one of these transactions that moves us in that direction, it's because we're immediately seeing the benefit, right? Nobody is, you know, maybe there are a few people sitting kind of wringing their hands and thinking, how can I set up a world where the machines take over, you know? And if somebody had that dastardly plan, they'd have a hard time making it work, right? Because that
well, you can't sell that to anybody, right?
Right.
But you can sell people on, you know, cheaper food. You know, you can, you know, that sells, you know, and better election information, that sells.
Yeah, better, more compelling information.
I ride to work where I don't have to worry about the guy in my carpool wrecking me and killing me. Instead, I take an automated Uber, you know, to work, which, you know, it's like one-tenth as dangerous. People will buy that.
And I think what ultimately is the strange, what's weirder than you think about the future is something we've talked about before, but you can't repeat it enough, is just our resiliency in terms of dealing with the new and the strange. How quickly we adapt and how willingly we adapt each time we see the benefit. Yep, there's all kinds of risks. There's all kinds of potential unintended consequences, all kinds of potential downsides. But ultimately, we're going to get weirder and weirder because the weirder world gives us more what we're looking for. And I think this really ties into what I was talking about on Wednesday, which is the challenge to us initially, kind of at the most fundamental level, is to become more imaginative. That we're called on not just to accept these new technologies when they show up, because that's the easy part. We're going to do that anyway, right? As soon as there's a benefit to a new technology, as soon as we see it giving us better info or driving us safer, or letting us read while we drive, you know, whatever that payoff is, we'll take that immediately. The harder step is to think two or three steps ahead, right? Especially because, as you pointed out, we're on Spock's chessboard now, and two or three steps can be at any number of different levels, and they can go in any number of different directions. And even that thing we call the adjacent possible is a very rich and very complex set of outcomes that we could be accessing if we thought about them, right?
Right.
Donald Trump being elected president, as I mentioned on Wednesday, is a very weird thing to have happen. But we could make much weirder things happen. You know, they're right within our reach that maybe we'd all be happy about. but we have to recognize that capability, and we actually have to extend both our grasp, you know, and kind of our both what we're perceiving as far as what's out there, and our ability to kind of reach out into it. I think if we can learn to work both those levers at once, the future adds that adjective I was looking for on Wednesday, which is, you know, it becomes not only strange, but strange and wonderful. So that's my
thing. I think it's something we ought to seek to encourage in young people too. I remember as a young person, kind of, the thing that was sort of a constant drumbeat in my education as a young person is, wow, he has so much potential. If he just stopped, you know, living in his dream world and come back to the class, he might actually do well in this class.
Right.
And you know, it seems to me that right now you can't dream weird enough. That's
right.
You know, it seems like what used to be, you know, far off, you know, la la dreamland stuff is like a business model now. And
yeah.
In order to be off in la la land, you have to be weirder than weird these days. And so it's like there's a dearth of it. There's not enough. We're not dreaming rich enough, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
We want a classroom where the teacher looks at the kid's daydream journal, which he has to turn in, and the teacher goes, you know what? You're not thinking nearly weird enough. I'm giving you this back. Now try again. I want you to really get out
there.
You're
not deep enough into La La Land just yet.
Get out there in La La Land and bring me back some strange, okay? That's what I'm telling you to do if you want to get an A in this class. That's the corner I think we're going to turn. That ultimately we have to turn where the easy part, not that it will be easy, but the straightforward part will be converting really good ideas into models that can then become actual whatever, products, actual systems, actual processes, actual experiences that people have. The automation will make that part of it fairly straightforward and simple. And the real challenge will be being imaginative enough, creative enough to actually come up with it, to dream weird enough to give us that strange future. So sooner the better. Anything I can do to encourage anyone to think strange, I'm definitely going to do.
And hence this entire podcast, I tell you. Well, it is Friday, Phil, and so we want to do a little other geek as we have been tending to do here lately on Fridays. So
let's talk some other geek, and I've got one other geek that I just want to mention real fast, because this is actually right up there, almost as weird to me when I look at it and think about it as Donald Trump getting elected president, which, to me is kind of the high point of weird. Or is it? I've been watching – do you watch Supergirl by any chance?
Yeah. It's an entertaining show. I think it might have actually it might get better at the new network that it's at. So it seems like the later shows here recently have been even better. But yeah, what's going on?
Here's a little quiz I ran with myself the other day, because I've started watching season two. I watched a few episodes of the first season, but I'm watching season two pretty regularly, and I enjoy it quite a bit. The thing that occurred to me was, oh, okay, so there's this TV show, and it's got Superman on it, and it's got Martian Manhunter on it, and Snapper Carr is actually on it now, or at least there's a character named that. He's not really the guy from the comics in any recognizable way. But, the Flash has been around sometime, and I'm giving this information to, like, 13-year-old myself, right? And I'm saying, yeah, this is a nationally aired network TV show in the year 2016. And of course, 13-year-old myself would be amazed, be like, wow, so it's like a Superman show. It's like, no, it's not a Superman show. It's like, oh, okay, so it's like a Justice League show. No, it's not a Justice League. What is it? Well, it's actually Supergirl, and Superman is a supporting character on the TV show Supergirl. And I'm just like, wow, just the whole idea that, my whole Silver Age storylines are being played out and these characters are appearing is just wonderful to me. I think I like the DC TV universe better than the DC movie universe, just because I relate to it so much better. It's all these characters and storylines I remember.
Well, and the Flash is a fun show too.
It's just fun. Yeah, it's it's very upbeat and very it just has a real sense of joy, kind of fun underpinning the whole thing. But the idea that's, I think that sums it up, actually. Superman is a supporting character. There it is. Boom.
Yeah.
How strange, how weird is that? That's about as weird, I think, as you have a TV show about Superman. Oh, no, it's not about him. He's just a guy they have on as a guest once in a while. He's kind of a sidekick to the person you're actually watching the show about. So anyway, to me, that future would have been unimaginable when I was a kid, right? That this stuff would even be taken this seriously, that it would take up hours of network program. Of course, we only had three networks back in my day, but there would have been hours of this stuff on every week. It's almost like, this is like heaven to 13-year-old me or 11-year-old me. Here we are.
Imagine trying to explain this to 13-year-old Phil. 13-year-old Phil, there's this show that you would like. It kind of reminds you of, it will kind of remind you of E.T. and maybe Close Encounters, maybe Poltergeist a little bit. Pretty much Spielbergian movies of your time, okay?
Sure.
and you're going to like it. You're going to like it a lot. And it's a TV show. Well, what channel? I sure want to watch it. Well, it's not exactly on a network. Cable television? No. This is on Netflix. Okay, explain.
Too many concepts have to be laid out here now.
Have to lay this
is
out.
Is that one of those VCR deals?
Explain.
For one thing, 13-year-old me, I would be going, is that some kind of VCR deal? Right? I don't know. I have no idea what you're talking about.
what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Well, have you heard about a Rapanet? Eventually it becomes the internet.
Sorry, 13-year-old me is hopeless. There's no way.
Yeah,
we're
I've lost you. I've lost you. Well, anyway,
yeah.
Stranger Things. I can't finish a week of programming about the power of Strange without mentioning one of my new favorite TV shows that called Stranger Things. Man, that's a lot of fun. That's it's meant to invoke Spielberg from the 80s.
Yep.
And Spielberg himself kind of went back to the well with that movie. What was it? 8mm
Super 8.
Or something? Super 8.
Super 8.
That's it.
Yep.
So you throw Super 8 in there as well. There's a little bit of that, seems like. Stranger Things has got all that, and the kids are just, fun, and the story is so weird and exciting and interesting. Got to watch that. I got to just tell our audience, if you appreciate when you see good child acting, because a lot of child acting is not, right? For every Haley Joel Osment, in Sixth Sense, you see, you're going to get, some Jake Lloyd from Phantom Menace, you're going to get 10 of those, right?
Right.
You have to have good directors to bring out good performances in kids because they don't have experiences they don't have long experiences as actors, unless you just luck into a natural or two. I think the show has a couple of the kids in the show are just flat naturals.
There's several of them. They're all good. And it's sustained over the course. It's like every now and then you strike gold in a movie and you got a kid who delivers a good performance. These kids, what did it run, 12 episodes? I don't know.
Yeah.
And they sustained it. It is a very well-crafted TV show, and that's one aspect of it, is that the kids are good all the way through. It keeps a tone all the way through. It keeps you in suspense about certain things all the way through. It reveals things at just kind of the right time. It is one of the best put together TV shows ever, I would say, of its kind. But what in the world is of its kind, right? It is.
Yeah, it compares well with nothing else, except for perhaps Spielberg from the 80s. That's about as close. But Steven Spielberg, I don't think he would have dreamed up anything quite this weird back in the 80s.
Yeah. It's stranger than any of the movies you mentioned. They truly are stranger things than you've seen in a TV show before. Pretty much, it's great fun. I'm looking forward to season two of that show. Absolutely.
Oh yeah, I'm so glad season two got greenlighted. Looking forward to that. It'll probably be one of those I'll binge watch once again. I blew a weekend on Stranger Things when I discovered it, and I'll probably do it again.
Yeah, that's what Netflix is for. And if we could explain that to 13-year-old Phil, he would really be thrilled at that thought. But sadly, I don't think he's ready for that idea yet. Although I'm pretty sure he was there with me watching Stranger Things. And
he was brought out by that, wasn't he? That's definitely, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, Stephen, I can't tell you how much fun it's been exploring the strange with you all week. And the good news for anyone who's sad now that our series is over, I bet we talk about some strange stuff next week. What do you think?
It would be strange if we didn't, right? That's what we do with this show.
It would indeed. We'll be back on Monday with three brand new shows. We look forward to being with you all then. And until next time, live to see it.